first I saw a tire just rolling, and I was like,
not good. Not a good sign.
That's super weird. And then I looked to my left. I think it was to my left. Then I looked to my right and saw the CLS.
Hello. Welcome back to the Auto Week Podcast, the place where you're getting all of your car driving, car listening, car reviewing, car culture needs. You're getting it all.
What about racing?
Oh, and racing even. I forgot. Mike Pryson. I forgot. We also talk about racing. Getting a lot of racing news. Thank you so much for joining us. Real fast, top of the show. Do not forget to swing over to iTunes. Give us that 5-star review. Keeps me employed. Keeps everyone happy. And lets us keep giving you what you crave, which is, right now, the news. Today, you're joined by myself. That's Wesley Wren. Mr. Wes Rainel. And Mr. Mike Pryson. We're touching on some... rental car news, and we're touching a little bit on the racing before we transition to the main feature of the show. Wes, can I go get a car from Hertz right now?
Be quick about it, Wesley. This has been playing out. The Chapter 11 reorg at Hertz has been playing out for about a month now. We first started hearing about it 3-4 weeks ago. It's a 102-year-old company, which makes it a little bit sad that it would be, you know, going out of business if it in fact does end up going out of business. People just aren't traveling at the moment, and it's putting a big hurt on rental car, you know, not just Hertz, Dollar, Thrifty, whatever. None of them are lighting the, you know, world on fire at the moment. The problem is, in addition to nobody traveling, car sharing. So you have a double way. If, you know, people that are traveling are often going through Uber or Lyft. So it's sort of a double whammy against the rental car agencies at the moment. It certainly is interesting to see how it plays out. The news, if there is such a thing, is Hertz is offering some smoke and diesel, some cool cars like, you know, Camaro 1s and Z06 Corvette. Who knows what else is going to come out in the next couple of weeks. But it's been a very big story. It's dominated the rankings in stories. The story ran on our site, so people are definitely interested in hearing about it.
What is huge news, Mr. Wes Rainel? This is, like you mentioned, a 102-year-old company, and arguably the company you think of when you think of renting a car, even if you go to Enterprise or any
That's
of
true.
Its competition. You instantly think of Hertz. I mean, obviously because of Hertz's lineage, right? It's history with performance variants, also known as free engine donors for weekend racers.
Yeah, exactly.
But what are you thinking? Do you think Hertz? I guess since we have a few minutes, what does Chapter 11 mean? I know you used to be a bankruptcy attorney,
right? Chapter 11 means that you're not necessarily going out of business if you can get your finances in order. So it's up to the Hertz banks who owes money to and how patient they are with the rental car firm. You know, if they give them a little bit of a leash or a rope, they could come out of it. If they can sell off some assets and make up some of that loss. If the bank persnickety, which I don't really think any bank is in a position to do that at the moment.
Well, you talk to my banks, Mr. Rainel.
Well, if your bank persnickety, you should unpersnickety them. But, you know, it depends how patient the banks are, really. It doesn't mean that Hertz is closing its doors tomorrow. It does mean that if it can't get its finances in order, And by filing for bankruptcy, you know, Chapter 11 is called bankruptcy protection. For it protects you from people that you owe money to. So we'll see how long the banks are firm. And it's going to be something I'm sure we'll hear new things about every day.
Well, Wes, is this the tip of the iceberg? I mean, are we going to see some more companies like this in trouble, or is this thing clearing right now and travel is going to pick up and everybody else is going to survive it?
Well, I think if I knew the answer to that question, I'd be investing. No, I don't know if more diamonds fall, right? Like Dollar could go next. Thrifty could go next. And like I said earlier, even if people do pick up, even if the travel picks up, I don't think travel is going to pick up a lot here.
Right.
That's just my crystal ball. I think travel is going to stay pretty specialized till the end of the year. But even if I'm wrong about that, I don't think I'm wrong about the notion that people that are traveling are also not always renting cars. They're using Uber. They're using Lyft. They're using, you know, cabs. So flying to a destination for 2 weeks and renting a car, I don't think that's going to happen much this year.
Well, I don't think so either, Mr. Rainel.
That's my fearless prediction.
But if they do want to travel, they could be traveling to a racetrack. Talk about transitions there, everybody.
Nice segue.
But you're not traveling to a racetrack because they won't let you in yet.
Well, you can always go and travel and look at them, can't you? Mike, can you wrap up this weekend's racing events? What happened? What'd you see? What the Coke 600, the truck race? What a lot of stuff happened. Can you wrap it up here?
We can wrap it up, but like we've been talking about, there's so much going on. There's so many races going on. It is hard to kind of keep up. But since we last talked, the big things were the Coke 600. Brad Keselowski did win that, which was a big win for him and Ford. And I think that maybe even as big a news out of that was Jimmy Johnson finished second and then got disqualified for a rear alignment issue of some sort that must have been so out of whack that, you know, that they did not even protest it. So they kind of walked away with their head between their tail and they just said, oh, we're out of here.
They should have taken the car to Bell Tire.
There you go. But what that did was Jimmy Johnson has, you know, this is his swan song season. He has not won a race since 2017. I think there's a lot of fans that want to see him at least make the playoffs this year. You know, we would love to see him win a race and qualify, but he may have to get in on points. And what happened was when you get a 0 point race or you finish last, I guess, at like he ended up doing this past week at the 600, he's now sitting in he's 15th point in points right now. Well, top 16 are going to get in, so he's back on that bubble, and it's going to be a long summer for him to, you know, get in the playoffs. So he's not going to get a race win. But that was the fun. The 600 was you know, that's a marquee race on Memorial Day weekend. And then real quickly, I'd like to touch on last night's trucks race. We're taping this on Wednesday, so that would have been on Tuesday night. Chase Elliott finally beat Kyle Busch. Kyle Busch had a 7-race winning streak in the truck series. You know, he's a
bounty hunter.
He's a truck regular, and finally, there was a bounty put on his head by rival Kevin Harvick and the series sponsor. They each kicked in $50,000, and they said, hey, can anybody beat Kyle Busch? And we're going to give this to charity. And Chase Elliott took him up on it, and Chase took his first trucks race in a few years, and he knocked off Kyle Busch, held him off last night, and it was a fun race. And, you know, I guess $100,000 goes to COVID-19 charities, and so it's all good. But, you know, Kyle Busch has been just dominant. When you get him out of the Cup Series and you get him in the Xfinity or the trucks, it's not even fair. And he almost won it last night. He was 11th in the final restart with like 35 laps to go, and he caught all the way up to second place and just not, you know, just couldn't get him at the end, and it was like about a half second difference. So it was a fun race, but the bounty has been claimed.
Now, Mike, real fast about that. Are we sure it was Chase Elliott driving? Because I've heard some rumors of some ringers hopping in some seats that they shouldn't be.
Yeah, we got to touch on that too. Daniel Abt is now my favorite former Formula E driver. He last week got caught at a one of those virtual races. We've had two major, or not majors, but at least two regular drivers now lose jobs because of what they did in a virtual race, which is insane. You know, we had Kyle Larson here a few weeks ago, lost his ride for uttering a racial slur in the middle of a race. Well, what happened this past week in the Formula E, they also have their home race at home series, they call it. Daniel Abt had really stunk up the joint the first four or five races in their series, so he finally got frustrated, hired a ringer, found a pro gamer who was better than all the guys out there, and suddenly Daniel Abt, who could barely keep his car on the track during the earlier race at home series races, suddenly qualifies second, finishes third. Fellow competitors are saying, hey, Daniel, is that you? I mean, they were half joking, and upon further review, no, it wasn't. And Audi, his team sponsor for the regular series, says, that's not really the kind of driver we want. We're about integrity and all this stuff. So Audi first suspended him, and then the next day, upon further review, said, go find another job, kid. So, well, and that's kind of too bad because App is a good driver. He's one of the few guys that has been in that Formula E series since it started in 2014. He's been in every race. So this is not a kid that just made a dumb decision. It's a veteran driver who made a dumb decision. And so now between him and Kyle Larson, they got a you know, couple seats at a table that they didn't want to be at.
But thanks for the update, Mike and Mr. Rainel. We're looking forward to seeing what happens with Hertz, and we're also looking forward to seeing what happens in the racing world. I'm assuming more races. Keep that green flag a flying. But until then, we're gonna head on to something else in the show. And we are here with a special treat, a bit of a special episode, the great Jake Lingemann. I've introduced everybody recently as great, so don't feel special about it, Jake, but you should feel special because I love you, man. Jake, how are you doing today?
Good. Yeah, don't worry. I don't feel special. I hope to engage the listeners with trials and tribulations of my most recent track day.
Oh, speaking of which, your most recent track day, you went to the fantastic, that's what we're talking about today. We're talking about the etiquette and excitement of doing a high-performance track day experience. That's a new acronym I will make up at some time. You can do the math on that. My cat is devastating my computer right now because he wants his chin scratched. I can't blame the guy. But
H-P-T-D-E?
Something. Okay. I don't know. But Jake, you went to the local John Wong Memorial Track Day, former Auto Weeker, Memorial because it's during Memorial Day. You took your 2014 Mustang, of which we inserted a seat bar in the other day in the pouring rain. It was a fantastic experience. Thank you for coming over. And you went to a track day. Now, for those of us that haven't been to a track day, where do you even start? Like, what am I going to bring to a track day, a track? Do I just bring a car? Do I bring...
All right,
Hertz rental car? Or?
Let's back up even further, because how do you even find your local track day?
Oh, how do I find my local track?
Yeah, I mean, the easiest way is to Google track days near me, and different racetracks will come up. They all have calendars on their website somewhere. Now, with coronavirus, you know, some of them are a little more spotty, although I did talk to the people at Gingerman, which is one of our, I'll call it local tracks, even though it's 2.5 hours away, one of our Michigan tracks, and they said that their calendar is already full. So people are ready to get back out there on the track. They said all the weekend days are full, or all the weekend days are spoken for. I don't know if they're full of people yet, but yeah, so we have one, two, three, four. We have about four, you know, good road courses in Michigan. You know, MIS also has a road course on it, and I think they do some public days there too. But yeah, look for public track days. Easy. You can just Google it, and they're run by lots of different groups. Sometimes they have names like the Porsche Club of America or the Corvette Club or Audi Four Rings, but you don't have to have that kind of a car to bring it to a track day. Most track days are just open. So once you find your local track day, you're going to want to pay your way in, which can go anywhere from like $200 to $300 for a full day. Sometimes it's like $350 for 2 days, like a Saturday, Sunday, which is a pretty good deal. If you can
and
get
that's
in,
to help cover the track rental, obviously. That doesn't get you any insurance or any food stuff.
No. If you can get it for $200 a day, that's a good deal. Like, I think an average day is like $250 or $225 or something like that. But this is one of our more private days. It's mostly journalists and friends. And Gingerman is very nice, and they allow us to come out there and just pay them a nominal fee to go for like half a day because they trust us. They know we're all serious drivers. No one's trying to race. And this is part of my speech I was going to actually give because we had a big day on Memorial Day. We had about 28 people. Normally we have
a lot of cars.
Normally we have like 15 to 20. There's no racing, no trophies, no winners. Timing doesn't matter. But you can lose. You can quickly lose everything if you
damage your car or your person.
If you damage your car, mess up. So yeah, like you said, it doesn't include insurance. Companies do offer track day insurance. I think it's like a couple $100 a day. I've personally never purchased it, but I wouldn't slight anyone for doing it because it's probably a smart move.
Most insurance policies don't have, or they have exclusions for any like performance driving or racing situations.
Yes.
Where they can just say, you were on a racetrack? Nah, that ain't a road. So they won't cover you. So it is encouraged to get track insurance.
Yeah, you will not be covered. I remember it was a couple of years ago. I think it was when the Camaro Z28 came out, the most recent one. And it was a in-car video of a guy crashing at a track day. And then you're like, bloop, this is OnStar. We've seen you've been in an accident. Can I help you? And he didn't say anything. He just like sighing and cursing. And she's like, sir, if we don't hear your voice, we're going to send the ambulance and police out right now. And he said, well, I'm on a track and I'm okay. And they said, well, then have a good day, sir. You're on your own.
That's unfortunate, but that is pretty funny.
Yeah. But so, I mean, we've joked about a couple of years ago, Corvette caught on fire.
That's not nearly as funny.
As they are wont to do. He was fine. Everybody was fine. And we jokingly were like, all right, let's push it out onto the road and call the insurance company. But we did not.
Well, I don't condone committing insurance fraud. But
more illegal.
So let's say you have a GTI or something. You get your track day insurance. You're ready to rock and roll. Where do we go from there? We found a track. Let's say we're going to Gingerbread. Well,
specifically to the GTI, you're going to want brake fluid and brake pads because I've seen those lose out to brake fade after one session. Also, you might want some ducts to some makeshift air ducts to feed air directly to your brakes. But if it's not a GTI, if it's a general car, any car.
The general rule of thumb is if you want to do high performance driving, you should probably upgrade your brake pads and brake fluid because stopping is
fundamental.
Fundamental. There we go.
Yeah, I did with my Mustang. Our friend John Wong used to work with us at Auto Week and now is on his own at CNET. Said,
well, he's got a team there.
He's on his own from us. That all you need to do with my Mustang 5.0 GT track pack, brake pads, and high temp fluid. And that's what I did for the first track day, and it was fine. A helmet, obviously, is required for all track days.
I like this.
But no. You don't need a 5-point harness or a racing seat or any of that, but you do want to check your local listings if you have a convertible, because some require cages, some require roll bars and stuff like that. Miatas seem to be allowed usually, but definitely check with your local track to see what the rules are for that particular day.
Yeah.
So helmet is the main most important thing. They'll pretty much let you go out in any car. The run groups on a public track day will be staggered, usually like novice, intermediate, and expert. And
oh, we're not even there. We're not even at the track yet, buddy. Let's pump the brakes. So we got our helmet. We have our cars ready.
Yep.
We know where the track is.
Yep.
And we have our we're all lined up.
Yep.
What else do we need to bring to make sure we have a really good track day?
Well, okay. So this is a matter of contention. I wrote a story for Auto Week magazine talking about how I do a track day. And my general rule of thumb with both my old cars and my track car is that the more tools you bring, the less likely something is to break. So I bring my jack, my socket set, my toolbox, my impact driver, all my bits.
Your little handheld toolbox, not like you're not bringing a 46-inch or 56-inch tool chest with you.
No, it is my handheld toolbox, but it's got to weigh 75 pounds. I mean, there's too many tools in there for sure.
I'm just giving the listeners I'm painting them a picture.
Yeah, I also bring an air compressor, even though most tracks have air, an air gauge for sure.
Tire pressure.
Yeah, a jack stands, of course, not Harbor Freight ones if you can avoid it.
Well, the ones that are currently being recalled. Let's be very clear. Mm-hmm. And you also bring a torque wrench to help make sure that your lug nuts aren't skedaddling as the wheel heats up.
Yeah, you definitely want to do all that because, like you said, with the temperatures we're talking about, and you know, I don't know how much more they are than a regular, you know, regular driving, but I would guess hardcore. I mean, if you're going 25 minutes, full blast on the gas, full blast on the throttle, I mean, full blast on the brakes, everything's heating up way more than it ever does or should. And I did learn that not to keep your AC on when you're going 25 minutes full bore because you will. Run into the H portion of your temperature gauge, which I realized on like a 90 degree day where I was just running with the AC all day or half the day or something like that. But so you have all your tools, you have your helmet, your safety gear. I bring a cooler. You know, most track days are, you know, like 8 to 4, 8 to 5 or something like that. So you're going to need some food and some snacks and some drinks, drink lots of water. Many tracks have concessions and they're usually open on public track days, but sometimes they're not. So I always bring that stuff. Bring your wallet because you're going to need lots of gas. I went through 2 full tanks and then another tank on the way home. So I think 3 full tanks over the course of the day, which in this day and age was not that expensive, which is fantastic. I think I filled up for, you know, I filled up 3/4 of a tank for $30, another 3/4 for $30, another 3/4 for $30 over the course of the day, which is pretty good. I've spent $150 on gas for sure. Not less than 100 feels great. Okay, so then you arrived to the track day, right? Are we there? Did we get there? Okay, we're there.
We drove between 10 minutes to 6 hours to our local track, and we're ready to drive now.
But you got to sign in. You got to get your bracelet to say that you're legal to drive. And then you get divided into run groups, usually novice, intermediate, and advanced. Usually everyone has to attend the driver's meeting. Sometimes the experts are excluded from that, but it's always good to attend the driver's meeting, especially if you haven't been to the track before, or it's always good to attend the driver's meeting. They give you
a good way to make friends.
Especially. And so they'll give you some of the more dangerous points to look out for on the track. They'll give you passing rules. You know, different rules have different different tracks have different rules for passing. Some is point to pass. So you put your arm out the window and point to the side you want them to go. Other times passing is restricted to certain portions of the track. So you're going to need to know all of that. Plus, like I said, the difficult portions or the tricky portions of the track. And you'll get all that in the driver's meeting, as well as usually an invitation for an instructor. Most of these public track days, even if they're run by a group, have instructors on hand to help out the novice drivers, which is always good. Even if you've been on a track before, getting out there again with someone who's done 1,000 laps on the track, 10,000 laps, is always a bonus. And you should take any instruction you can get all the time. I mean, I've been to hundreds of these things, and I still always take an instructor on the first time if possible.
Well, I mean, if you're not racing or hitting a track every weekend, there's always room for improvement. And the person who is if that's their home track, they probably know it better than you. So
always.
Never hurts to get tips.
And it's I've been to the same track two different times with two different instructors and got different racing lines and different this and different that from each of them. So, you know, I wouldn't even be against saying, I had this guy last time, let me try a new guy just to get his take on the track, because sometimes they'll have a little bit different takes depending on what they drive. You break up into your groups, and then usually a standard would be like 8 to 820 novices, 820 to 840 intermediate, 840 to 9 o'clock expert, and then that rolls over again and again until lunch, and then starts again up in the afternoon. Track workers need a break. Everyone needs a break. So usually there's like an hour break for lunch or something like that.
Let's go back to the passing situation, because some people don't understand. Now, obviously, our listeners understand clearly because they're a bunch of smart folks. But as we witnessed, I don't know if you saw the story, but the Toronto Motorsports Park opened up.
Yeah, we talked about that
a little bit ago. And it was utter chaos, because some people don't understand that a track day is not a race. So let's talk about the etiquette on track. Like you mentioned the point to pass. What's your position? Like if you're on somebody and they don't point or turn their turn signal, which I think is also a form of saying go ahead and pass me as you flip the turn signal on.
Yep, definitely. When you're at a public track day, especially in the novice group, you will have some novices, and some of them it may be their first time on the track, and you will want to give them wide berth whenever you can.
Because you don't know what they're gonna do.
You know what they're going to do. And before you know, it's just bad karma to make fun of anybody's driving on the track, because everyone's been to their first track day and everyone was nervous and they didn't know if they're going to be fast enough or look cool enough or whatever.
Well, I don't know if everybody was nervous. I think Senna.
I bet on his first track day when he was 4 years old and 9 months, he was a little bit nervous in his first track day. So the passing rules, when you have flag workers, corner workers in the flag boxes, and that's another thing to go over in the driver's meeting, is what the flags mean. Blue flag, black flag, flag with the cross on it. Black flag usually means come right in.
I thought black flag usually means you're about to have a nervous breakdown because your head really hurts.
No, black flag usually means they'll wave it at you, then they'll roll up and point it at you. And that means come right in. If you see, you know, they're different for different tracks, but I think it's a white flag with a black ball means stop where you are. There's a danger on the track. And everyone's we're stopping racing for the moment, which is very, very, very rare. You will see a caution flag, a yellow caution flag. Not often, but if someone spins off or something like that, you'll have like a localized caution flag. So you're coming up over a hill, see the yellow flag. You slow down to, you know, half speed, if not third speed, and wait till either you see the incident or till the next track, till the next corner worker that's not moving the flag, then you can go back to full speed. But so now, also
a little pro tip, at least for me, I bring my own caution flag. So I just constantly wave it outside the car to let people know I'm a danger. Please get out of my way.
Well, no one will pass you that way. It's perfect.
That's what I'm saying.
No car might blow. Just stay behind me. Stay behind me. But so one of the flags, it's usually a blue flag with a yellow X across it, means you're holding up traffic. So let them by. And if you see that flag, sometimes they will also be pointed at you in anger. Look in your rearview mirrors and let whoever's behind you pass, because that's where things get dangerous, when the delta in speed is so different that you don't want a really fast driver behind a really slow driver, especially an unpredictable driver.
And to interject a little bit, because I don't spend as much time on the track, I would be less focused on my rearview mirror than I would be what's in front of me, because I'm trying to not crash.
True.
And not embarrass myself.
That's what you would, if you're in the novice group, you definitely look for more of that, and it would go less and less
That's why you need to pay attention to the corner workers and the flags, because if you're not necessarily paying attention to the guy in the 911 right on your bumper who owns the track and runs it all day, you might make people angry and you might cause some erratic behavior.
Yeah, or not get invited back. Also, usually,
or not get invited back.
Yeah, at the beginning of the day, a lot of times you'll take a recon lap to find all the corner workers. And you kind of got to make little mental notes. So you got 12 corners and you got 6 corner workers, you know, in between them. You kind of note where they are. Give them a quick glancing look as you go over the hill or go around the turn to make sure there's not a flag pointed at you or someone behind you. In my experience,
all my reconnaissance laps have all been performed by butlers. Kind of weird. British butlers just walk me around the track saying, "What? And now, just be careful. Let's do a corner, eh?" That's my British butler impersonation. They call me Mr. Wayne, too. It's very weird.
That's terrible. But not joking aside, on autocross days and sometimes on regular track days, they'll let you walk the track in the morning so you can get a real sense for what the pavement is doing. And it is good. I mean, it is good. You can feel things with your feet that you can't see. Even going at half speed, you can't see. But so you check your corner workers. As far as passing goes, so our day is
follow the rules that are laid out in the guidelines of your track day. Be very clear.
Yeah. But you continue. Will be either pointed at with that you're going too slow flag, or it will be arm out the window, point usually to the side. Sometimes the slower car stays on the driving line. Sometimes the slower car gets off the driving line and lets the faster person pass on the driving line. And then in other days, and you know, I've only experienced this on launch events, is the turn signal thing. When you want someone to pass, you give them whatever side you want to pass on, you give them that turn signal. Give them the left turn signal, you pull to the right, slow down. Don't try to race them as they pass. That's the worst possible thing you can do. Let them pass.
You're obviously slower than them anyway, because they're right on you.
Yeah. And you know,
Most
of the time the passing is done on the straights, and like at Gingerman, at the end of the straight is a turn. So if you let someone pass you and then get back to race speed real quick, you're going to be side by side through the turn, which is, I'm trying to think if it's 100% no-no or 99%. It's 100% no-no on a public track day. You never go too deep. You never go too wide in the corner. That's only for racing. I never try to
push somebody out off the line.
No,
as you're diving in.
Although the only person that gets to break that rule is the person who owns the track, because at Gingerman on Monday, Dan was out there and he was in a Z06 Corvette. And 2 slower cars let me pass, and I blew by them, and I got back into, you know, relax, go fast mode, checked my rear view, which I should have done 5 or 6 seconds earlier, and he was on my ass in his Z06. I, like, skirted out of the way to let him by, and that's only acceptable if you're the owner of the property and the track. So there's one guy whose track that can do that.
Because he can't kick himself out.
Mm-mm. And he will be invited back.
He will be invited back. So you do your 7 laps, 10 laps, whatever your stint is, and then what?
So you do your 7 or 10 laps. Usually, if it's 20 minutes, 10 laps, something like that. And cars that are built for the street, I mean, I've never went more than 15 laps in one session. I mean, maybe that's the max I've ever went in one session. That's a lot of wear and tear on the car. If you drive for 20, 25 minutes, let it sit for 25, 35 minutes, you're in pretty good shape.
The cool down lap's what I'm getting to.
Oh, sorry. Okay. Yeah. Yeah. So before you get off the track, also using your arm to signify that you're getting off the track, the last time you cross the finish line before you get off the track, usually take a full lap of cool down. I've been on events before where it's only a half lap of cool down, but there's no, it's only a benefit to, there's no drawback to taking more cooldown than less cooldown. So a full lap of cooldown, I'll even give up the last corner at Gingerman. It's a really hard breaking event. I'll give up the last corner and then go through the start finish line and cool down that whole next lap, get that brake flown over, or the air flown over your brakes. Because even if you pull off and park, the part where your calipers are, even if the air is hitting the rest of the brake disc, the part where your calipers are don't get air, and they will overheat and they will continue to stay hot. And you don't want that. So that's why you need to be going. And you can't go too slow on your cool down lap either. You want to go not race speed. You don't want to touch the brakes, but you want to go quick enough to get lots of air over those tires. When you come back around to the pit area, it's usually arm out the window, hazard lights probably on. I do hazard lights for my whole cool down lap. And that means I'm getting off the track, arm out the window, hazard lights on. Then you pull back to your pit after you've done your cool down, check your tire temperatures to see where you're at the end of a run. And check your lug nuts. I have been at a track where someone was out there with a CLS 55, which is not a great track car. I think it weighs more than 5,000 pounds. I can remember it so vividly. First, I saw a tire just rolling, and I was like,
that's not good. Weird. Not a good sign.
That's super weird. And then I looked to my left. I think it was to my left. Then I looked to my right and saw the CLS dug into the grass with its brake disc, you know, down to the hub, just dug into the grass down to the hub of the front wheel because the tire fell off. You want to check your lug nuts every time. Usually after the third time, they're solid. Like they won't move after the third time tightening them down. But no harm in checking. There's no drawback to checking again. And then you also, I always loosen them and then retorque them at the end of the day too, before the drive home. Because once you get everything all cool,
it's going to get real hard.
Yes. I don't know exactly how the temperature change works, but if you leave them at wherever they were and then you cool down back to normal temperatures, they're going to be at 150 pound feet instead of 100
Which,
pound feet.
This could be a very good segue to talk about how torque is not an accurate representation of clamp load, but that's for my other show. That's for my nuts and bolts about nuts and bolts, we'll call it. But so I guess in closing, I would like some of your final thoughts about, let's say this is a great guide. I'm not saying it's not a great guide, but should I wet behind the ears, greenhorn, do you think it would be smart of me to go to a high performance driving day, like a school, before taking my chances on a first track day, or should I just dive right into a track day?
I mean, obviously I would say yes. There's no drawback to doing more high performance driving schools. The instruction is always good. It's great when you can use a car that's not yours, but it's also good to use your own car. But again, it's the money thing. I mean, I didn't have, you know, the cheap high performance driving schools are $500 a day. Expensive ones are $1,500 a day or more. And I never had that. You know, I never had that money. Another good way, a great way to get into it is going to autocross. Autocross.
That is true.
You're out there by yourself. You have a lot
in a parking lot, generally pretty wide.
Parking lot generally. And at both track days and autocrosses, everyone is very nice with loaning tools and giving tips, and no one's trying to beat anybody. So it's not like you're being secretive about your race line or anything like that. So talk to everybody you can. But yeah, autocross is a great little first step into full-on road course track days, because the tracks are shorter. You get less track time, but they're also cheaper. They're cheaper than a road course track day. So that would be, you know, if you can afford a high-performance track day, high-performance driving experience school before track day, best case scenario, definitely try an autocross, will be second best case scenario. And then third best would be show up. You are allowed to show up without any previous experience.
Go to a local track and just say, hey, I'm here to hang out and watch.
Yeah, you can certainly do that. That's free. That's as far as I've ever seen, that's always been free to come watch track days. You know, get out there. You're going to be in a novice group. Say, I need an instructor. It's my first time, and everyone understands. Like I said, I was super nervous on my first track day. And, you know, now when people come and are nervous, I'm like, hey, it's okay. Go out with the novices. Don't be nervous. Drive to your abilities. Let people pass you when necessary. Go only as fast as you feel comfortable. The only time, you know, maybe one time I've seen someone that they said, like, you're actually going too slow. It's almost dangerous. We're going to need you to practice more before you come back or something like that. But that's out of 100 track days, I've seen that once or something like that, where someone was actually deemed unsafe for the track. But like I said, yeah, Best case scenario, like you said, high performance driving. Second best, autocross. If not, show up.
Well, I will have to say the absolute best case scenario is head over to the Apple iTunes or Apple Podcast Store, whatever they're calling it this week, and drop us a 5-star review. Really do appreciate it. Do love it. Keeps us all going. And make sure to tell a friend. Make sure to share this as much as humanly possible. If you want to hear more about track days, just tweet at Jake Lingeman. Think you got a Twitter.
I'll answer all tweets.
He'll fill you in. And yeah, thank you so much. I hope you enjoyed our dive into track days. A little something different, a little taste of something different from the norm. But again, please swing by Apple iTunes, drop us a 5-star, drop us a quick review, let us know what you think. And most importantly, thank you for listening.